Connection. Today's date is September 17th, 2008. It's a Wednesday. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here for another most important of broadcasts. Now, much has happened since the last time we were on when I was on air with you. So much has gone on with the financial system. No surprises for me, though, which is interesting. And if you're a regular French Connection listener, there shouldn't be any surprises for you either. Sadly, this is probably the one of the few times in my life being right is brings me no joy. This situation is dire, and that's an understatement. I mean, it's awful because, ladies and gentlemen, I see a continuing cascading of the world's financial system until... Well, I don't know until what. We're going to talk about until what, possibly, in a moment here. I must tell everybody who does tune into the French Connection, and by the way, I will repeat this, we are heard every broadcast in over 155 countries worldwide. Now, 155 nations is no small feat for a little internet broadcast or a CII broadcast out of South Africa. So if you're a Pan-African listener and you come to the internet site and listen to this broadcast, you need to tell other people about these facts. We have a lot of information for you today. It's going to be a culmination of information that we've gleaned over the last 11 months. And it behooves you to go back into the files and learn a little bit about what this this problem, this financial mess really is. Go to the Mohammed Rafik files dating back all the way till October of last year and begin to listen. There's about 7 or 8 hours worth of them. It will give you an overview, a complete overview of this problem in detail. And in fact, we knew the details of this mess by November of last year, and by the 1st of January, we had the entire problem sussed out, including what would be blowing and what wouldn't be blowing, and even how bad the banks were going to be affected. My guest today, again, is Mohammed Rafik. He is presently in Dubai on a business trip, so this connection could come in and out of clarity from time to time. But, Mohammed, are you with me?
I certainly am, Daryl, and Salaam alaikum and Ramadan Mubarak to all the Muslim listeners out there.
Well, happy Ramadan to you, too. You know, we're doing this a little early because your fast period is ending just after we do our show here, and you got to run out and get some food in you there, Mohammed. I'm sure you're a little bit hungry as we speak.
I'm quite good at making up for the period of abstinence.
Well, that's good. Now, listen, you know... The world's going to be looking for food, and they're going to be running around hungry, and I fear there isn't going to be much food around if I'm right about the next phase of this nightmare. It looks like we are seeing explosions of financial instruments worldwide in every major company. Now, here's the thing, Mohammed. I want to start out with this. If you're a big corporation or a big business and you had a cash flow savings account or you had a capital account that was only marginally used for cash, you would almost invariably go to the marketplace and buy instruments for that account so that you would be bringing in cash to your business aside from its cash value. In other words, you'd be bringing in a profit. And so every major company in the world worth their salt was involved in derivatives for one reason or another. Am I correct in saying that?
The derivative market has grown exponentially over the last 10 years, and I think in one of the earlier files, Daryl, I commented on the nominal amount that was under trade in the 1990s when it first started out, and the amount today, which is obviously in the hundreds of trillions, and it's literally grown by thousands of fold.
Well, now, it's not just businesses, it's cities and municipalities across the United States, and I'm certain Europe as well, when they were looking to park some of their cash, they would move it into some of these instruments. So my point is this, as these things go bad, they're going to find losses on balance sheets in places people didn't expect. You're going to see your local small city in America say, well, we had that whole account was in a derivatives market account, and we've lost it. and they're going to go to the taxpayer and tell them, well, we lost all the money for the road building project, or we lost our tax revenue from last year, or whatever. Orange County in California got involved in derivatives back in the early 90s, and it caused the whole county to go bankrupt. Now, I'm anticipating not only communities, but small and medium-sized businesses who tried to park money in there. In other words, we're looking at problems starting to erupt everywhere as a result of these things going bad, aren't we?
Well, of course, as these derivatives mushroomed and expanded all over the place, we went from just the sharp end of the financial engineers and financial techies to it going down to municipalities, etc. And derivatives were often used to try and hedge out some kind of risk. It's a great irony, Darrell, that these things were used to try and mitigate risk and to offset risks that different groups had, whether it was a council, whether it was a government, whether it was a bank, whether it was a corporation. They were all trying to reduce their risks. And the irony is that because of the way in which these things have been structured, and because of the way that they've been priced and valued and risk assessed, because all of this was done wrongly, what's actually happened is that rather than reducing exposure to financial loss, when we say exposure, ordinarily we're talking about exposure to financial loss, rather than reducing their exposure, what they've actually done is increase their exposure to the world. But it's only when these things start blowing up that these people realize how much they lost. A classic for this, of course, was Enron.
Yeah.
Enron actually went bust as a result of derivatives that it had issued in some offshore companies. They thought that they'd come up with a clever way of making money out of the energy that was being produced by them, and they drafted up these contracts with some counterparties, and those contracts actually caused the business to disappear. So we're not talking hypothetically. We've got a case history, a very famous case history, of one company that went completely down the plug hole because of this paperwork and because they didn't understand the real risks involved and how to draft it and how to price it correctly.
Well, what happens is going into it, you're paying pennies for a possible wonderful upside if the conditions are right for you. But also, on the converse of that, if an error is made and the notional becomes real, all of a sudden you're on the hook for huge sums. And what we've got today is packaged loans that have some bad elements to them that have blown up, which were used as security for other instruments that have also blown up as a result. And we've seen a domino effect across the financial world, and now we're starting to see it in these credit default swaps. We're seeing it on all these hedging instruments. We're seeing it on almost every instrument that can be written has some element of it that has gone bad. And so what we're seeing is there's no paper out there worth buying.
Well, of course, with AIG going bust at the moment, there's a lot of fuss in the press about the $200-odd billion worth of bonds which they've got issued.
Ah.
And surely that loss, $200 billion, is a substantial loss. I'm not saying it's not. It's a huge sum of money. But it's nothing compared to the amount that's been lost on credit derivatives. It has been announced by the financial regulators that 10%, 1 in 10 of all credit derivative contracts had AIG as a counterparty. Now, that means that, and the credit derivatives, of course, now we've explained on the show previously, are that the value of those papers in circulation at the moment is estimated in the region of $65 trillion.
Well, but wait, Mohammed, that's 10% of the overall there's $728 trillion worth of derivative instruments of all different flavors out in the marketplace right now.
That's right, of all different flavours, correct. But if we just look at the credit default swaps, these particular credit derivatives, well, of course, the counterparty has gone bust.
Yeah.
So what the actual bet, we're at the stage where we're looking at this contract, and it's a bet, and somebody's saying to you, I'll bet you, AIG, that you don't go bust, or that I'll bet, or I'll make a bet with you, Darryl, that AIG won't go bust, etc., etc. So these are...
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for that little blip. It wasn't much to you, but it was about a 10-minute problem we had here. My computer was just attacked. It was shut down. I have no computer right now. And my phone line was cut. So we got it back up. Odd that it always happens when I'm talking about important issues, but we're going to get right back into it. Mohammed was talking about the $200 billion price tag for the AIG bailout figure, but in fact, he was also mentioning that 10% of all of these credit derivative swaps are counterpartied by AIG, which means that if we've got $65 trillion worth of these swaps, that means $6.5 trillion is in there. Address book. So, Mohammed, you can continue from there.
Yeah, so this $6.5 trillion, Darryl, this is actually insurance which the other parties went to AIG and said, hey, we're worried about this little company over there or that little company over here. Will you give us some insurance against them going bad? And that means, you know, when banks do their solvency ratios, their capital adequacy calculations, they're allowed to say, well, okay, we've got these bonds here, that's an exposure, but this credit derivative with AIG over here is offsetting that. This is the idea of the, we give the example of umbrellas and ice cream.
Right.
Okay, we've got exposure to umbrellas here, but we've got ice cream company over there, which is offsetting it. So this is one of the methodologies. Credit derivatives are very popular for offsetting risks so that they can remain solvent. $6.5 trillion worth of exposure around the world has just come back up on books of institutions everywhere. Anyone who'd gone to AIG for insurance risk, they've now got full exposure to whatever it is they thought they'd insured against.
And did they sell on any of this risk to other reinsurers, to other people carrying other contracts? In other words, AIG was more like the mother insurer, and there were a lot of smaller companies that were going to them for coverages and for different transactions. Am I correct?
That's right. There are certain types of companies out there, I won't name them, but there are certain banks out there who had a good rating.
Go ahead, Mohammed. We've had another shutdown of this phone system. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I haven't had this in months. All of a sudden, we're starting to talk about these subjects, and we're chopped twice. So go back into it, Mohammed. The floor is yours.
So we have a situation where all these middleman companies would actually buy insurance from AIG and then themselves go and sell insurance on using the difference in credit ratings. And there are companies that actually traded out of that. And obviously those companies themselves had written credit derivatives which they then taken secretly out insurance themselves with AIG so that they didn't have any true exposure to whatever the underlying risk is.
Now, Mohammed, let me ask a question now. Because these instruments were not regulated per se, except for the fact that they wanted them to be balanced, they wanted counterparty balance to each one of the transactions, but anybody could write these. It wasn't just the banks writing them. Obviously, if a credit default swap is being written by AIG, they're not a bank, they're an insurance company. So the fact is, you didn't have to be a bank to be writing these. You could be Munich Re. You could be just about any financial institution of any type.
Absolutely. As long as people thought that you were good to pay up in the event of a default. So insurance companies, they were primed to get into this industry because that's what insurance companies do. It's very, the instrument might sound complicated, but it's exactly the same as a life insurance contract or car insurance. You know, they only pay out if you have an accident. So they can take exposure to a large number of cars and sell insurance policies to huge numbers of people, knowing that there'll only be so many accidents in a year, so we'll still be making money. It's the same kind of thing. They're saying, we know there'll only be so many defaults based on the default probabilities published by the rating agencies and so on and so on, so we get enough premium. If something does go default, we've got it covered. That was the theory. But the reality is that AIG is AAA rated. It's like all these other institutions which are AAA rated that have been bailed out. AAA is not supposed to fail.
That's right.
Therefore, the whole point is that, you know, the probability of a failure in AAA is one, I believe it works out, one every 12 years or something like that. And they're falling by the basket load at the moment.
So where's,
We've had so many AAA failures.
Where's Fitch in this story? I mean, come on. These guys are supposed to be carrying the ball when it comes to ratings. And how is it that they could not see this coming? I mean, AIG did lie out through their teeth, but who's auditing their books? Question is, if they're a public company, who's running their numbers? Anybody would be able to look and see what kind of exposure they have to the derivatives market.
I'm afraid I absolutely have to agree with you, Darrell. We have a terrible situation where the companies who specialize in giving us warning signals about the financial viability of companies out there, you know, these companies, they move somebody from AAA down to AAA minus, then AA plus, and all these smooth little tweaks here and there based on some nuance or some bit of information they don't like. How on God's green earth has this institution gone from AAA to D, default, overnight? How can the rating agencies be this wrong? What else are they so wrong about, Darrell?
Well, the whole thing comes down to this, Mohammed. Our financial system is based on trust. And right now, in my view, there is no reason anywhere to trust any of these people for anything. I mean, and look, we've talked personally about some other shenanigans going on in the TSX up in Canada. We've talked a little bit about the overseers of the oversight people who are supposed to be watching these transactions not doing their job. Well, the fact is, Fitch is one of the oversight agencies, and so is Moody's and several others. These people haven't been doing their job. And I'm wondering if it's by design or don't they even understand what these instruments do?
I think the terrible news is now that they're fully aware of the damage that they're doing, and they have joined in the game of telling lies to the public. And as you say, this whole thing's based on trust, and these people have violated our trust to the extent that I think that once, because now that we've reached the elastic limit of intervention, they can't intervene any further in any of this. The ability to intervene has now finished. We're at that stage now. They were able to come in at the beginning of the year with big numbers and try bailing out people with here and the issues there, but now we're beyond that now.
Well,
the bailouts are finished.
Yeah, but
so
you know,
now we've got to pay the piper.
I talked to you about them trying to monetize some of this, at least for the short term. They can't monetize $65 trillion. They can't. But what they can do is take bubble gum and stick it in the dike holes. You know, the dike is leaking everywhere. The bubble gum might last for a week or 2 weeks. My point being is this. They're trying to print a lot of money. By printing money, I don't mean printing presses, ladies and gentlemen. I mean somebody's making an entry in a computer system with a bunch of zeros on it and saying, okay, we've just created $50 billion. Go use it for this or that. The fact of the matter is I see that all they're trying to do is get their friends and their buddies out of this thing as quick as possible before the whole shooting match goes into nothing.
Well, a good example of the monetization that you're discussing, Gal, and the current fiasco is in Fannie Mae and the Freddie Mac, these two mortgage companies. Now, everybody's heard this phrase, probably grandfathering now, whereby the American government said, because these two companies are now bankrupt, they're insolvent, we're taking them over and we're going to effectively nationalize, federalize their debt, so that that debt that was private, with private companies, is now going to be placed as part of the U.S. government debt. Now, the interesting thing about that, Darryl, when we come to monetization, we see that, in fact, the government, that Bush recently went to Congress and said to Congress, I need another $1 trillion, please, and they raised the U.S. government debt ceiling to $9 trillion. You remember that, Darryl?
Yes, I do.
Well, by them grandfathering, i.e. taking on nationally within the U.S. responsibility for this debt, they've now added another $4.1 trillion to the U.S. debt. Without going to Congress, without asking permission to raise the ceiling, this year the U.S. national debt now stands at 13 point something or other trillion dollars, and it began the year at just under 8. It's gone up 60%.
Yeah.
They can't print any more money. They've gone $4.1 trillion over what the Senate and Congress had already approved.
Well, what you're saying
is, they can't take it any further.
Well, what you're saying is that if they continue, we will see a Weimar Republic. We will see wheelbarrows full of dollar bills buying a loaf of bread. We will see.
What's the real value of the dollar now that they've actually gone out and created this as government debt? And the thing to bear in mind for all the listeners out there, when you say, well, what's the difference between this debt being privately owned and publicly owned? The difference is this, isn't it, Darryl? Now we've got $14 trillion, $13.1 trillion, say with an average interest rate of 5% per annum, means $650 billion per annum interest has to be paid out of taxpayers' money. It's not coming from private companies. All the interest that's being paid out on that debt is coming from U.S. taxation. The taxpayer's going to get creamed for all of this.
Now, let's talk a little bit about how this affects other countries. Every country on Earth, because the dollar has been the reserve currency of the world, every country that wants to do business with any other country has to have a reserve of dollars in their treasury. That means they have what they call a basket of currencies in their treasury reserve. They'll have a 40%, let's say, 40% euro, 60% dollar, or they'll have a 30 euro, 40% dollar, and some yen in there. Basically, the main currencies of the world are in this basket so that their currency does not fluctuate wildly in any one direction. And usually, it's countered by a currency that rises when the dollar falls. So that's why you'll see the yen in there, and that's why you'll see the euro in there, because the euro is usually moving converse to the dollar's moves. But the fact of the matter is, as a reserve currency, the dollar no longer has any validity. So now, 30 or 40% of every country on Earth's treasury has just evaporated. What do you think?
The dollar has gone down enormously in value, and so has the value, because these Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bonds are being nationalized. Also, the amount of, they've effectively become U.S. government securities. They're now U.S. long bonds. You know, or these things have effectively changed character. But who's paying? The taxpayer in America. And at the end of it, when these bonds mature, the U.S. government has to pay out the $4.1 trillion in maturity. But hey, the government didn't get that $4.1 trillion. That went to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So you're paying interest on capital that they've never had as taxpayers in the United States. And on maturity, they have to pay back the $4.1 trillion that they never even, they've never seen. It's never gone into the U.S. economy. They've been completely and utterly scammed. through the ignorance of the average American, not understanding the way their financial system works, they have been the biggest scam I've seen in the history of all central banking. I've never seen anything like this, Darrell.
But it gets worse. It gets worse. Well, when we're talking numbers of the trillion, 13, 14 trillion national debt, the nominal value or notional value, if you will, of the instruments that are in the different flavors of derivatives, and we've got hedging instruments against shorts, longs. We've got every kind of instrument you could think of in the derivatives market, but it amounts to over $729 trillion now. Of that $65 trillion that you said is already starting to blow now, there are another, once those go, many of those are involved in the other derivatives. In other words, if a company that had that $65 billion holdings, one of those companies has, let's say, $100 billion worth of holdings of this nominal value, all of a sudden, the other instruments within their portfolio begin to go bad because they were using their rating or the health of their company as credit. And now their company's sick because of the losses in the other departments, so now those other instruments go bad. In other words, this domino effect doesn't stop at $65 trillion, Mohammed. It continues on all the way till the end. It's a burn, and it burns to the end of the $700 trillion, in my view.
It clearly does, Darrell. I mean, the thing is that there are, obviously, AIG has been a counterparty to many other types of instruments out there, whether it's credit reference swaps, whether it's interest rate swaps, currency swaps, all sorts of exotic bond options and other types of contracts. Wherever AIG has been a counterparty in the derivative market, and I don't think it'll be as large, 10% of the other $650 trillion, but there'll still be a substantial portion, and even if they're just 1 or 2% of that, let's say they're only 1% of that as a counterparty, again, you've got another $6.5 trillion worth of contracts going. The total loss through the failure of this bank in the derivative market, in my opinion, has to be a minimum of $10 trillion, and it's probably nearer to 15.
Well, and as I said, the contagion going into companies and banks across the Eurozone, into every major Asian bank, there's nobody that's going to come out of this unscathed. But you made a very interesting observation when we spoke privately, Mohammed, and I mentioned to you, I saw the same thing. There seems to be a champion in every market that's going to do okay. Now, I remember back when we started talking about these things blowing up last October, we really got into it. I told you I had read an article about Goldman Sachs starting to unleverage all of their derivatives exposure in June. Now, you and I both know the thing didn't blow until August. So I'm saying to you, wait a minute here. How could these guys be deleveraging their derivatives exposure in June when the thing's not going to go belly up until August? Now, the same thing has just been reported here in France of their largest retail bank saying their exposure to this nightmare is almost nil. And I'm saying to you, is that a lucky chance? Well, no. The bank I'm talking about is BNP Paribas, and if you don't know what they are a Rothschild-held bank. And it's no surprise to me that also Goldman Sachs is behind the scenes run by the same forces.
Well, I think that the way that I see it is that it's very much going to be a last man standing. The institutions out there are all across the board aware internally of how bad the situation is. Some people, and this is the thing now about insider trading and the value of information, some people will have known that AIG was going to go. It's impossible that people haven't known for the last 3 to 6 months internally that the company is going to go bust. It's also impossible to think that people with inside the institution are not talking to friends without. And that's where pulling power and knowledge and being able to take people to look at brown paper envelopes, that's where it counts for everything. Anybody who's been able to get out of AIG exposure positions in the last 3 to 6 months is laughing at the moment, especially, you know, to whoever they've sold those bonds on to or those they've offset the credit risks to. They're completely laughing. We have to ask who that is. At the moment, without looking internally at the portfolios of the companies, we can't say. But yes, Bank Paribas have actually come out, as you say, and publicly said, hey, we haven't got any exposure. So it may be fortuitous in that they never had any, or it may be that they found something out 6 months ago and started removing it.
Societe Generale got hit very hard. So did Crédit Agricole. Agricole is their second largest bank here in France. They all took multi-billion dollar hits in the derivatives market. And my guess is SoGen's going to come up for another $10 billion loss after their last seven. And same thing with Crédit Agricole. The fact of the matter is that these other banks are slated for folding into maybe a BNP, maybe the national champion here. You mentioned that when you were looking at Dresdner Bank and Deutsche Bank and different banks in Germany, there was only one bank that looked real strong. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there's one bank that I'm